Leaders are readers. After interviewing over 300 experts on my podcast, I've compiled the top 30 books written by Mindset Advantage guests. You can download the list and listen to the episodes where I interview the authors at djhillier.com/30books. You can also head over to my Instagram bio to download the free ebook right now. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Mindset Advantage podcast, a show dedicated to insightful conversations in a world full of sound bites. Hosted by fitness coach, performance optimization coach, and national speaker, DJ Hillier. These podcasts are designed to help you attack the gap from where you are now to where you want to be. The episodes take a deep dive into leadership, mindset, and fitness. Follow the show on Instagram at Mindset Advantage Podcast and subscribe to his newsletter at djhillier.com. So let's get to it.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. This is DJ Hillier, and you are listening to episode 346 of the Mindset Advantage Podcast. Before I tell you about today's amazing guest, I first want to share with you some very exciting news. In just a few weeks, on April 27th, I'm releasing my first ever book titled Push the Sled, 7 Skills to Build an Elevated Mindset and Amplify Performance in Any Sport. This book has been in the works for the last 12 months or so, and I am so excited to share it with you all. If you're looking to support me or support this show, this would be the best way to do so. On Saturday, April 27th, head over to Amazon, purchase the book, and if you would, also leave a rating and a review. You would be shocked to find out that those little things, those ratings and reviews, help the exposure tremendously on the book. There's so many algorithms and lists and all these things on Amazon, and it really just goes off of those ratings and reviews. So if you would, purchase the book on April 27th. I know you're going to love it. And then also, if you do, leave a 5-star rating and a review on the book. It'd be much appreciated. And also just share it on your social medias. I'd love to see the book all over the country and all over the world, perhaps. So head over to Amazon April 27th and purchase my first ever book, Push the Sled. Today, I get to talk to Eric Wood. Eric is a former NFL center for the Buffalo Bills, where he was an immediate starter, 2-time Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee, and a Pro Bowler. In 2018, Eric received surprising news that he had a spinal injury that would take him away from the game he loves so much. With so much left to offer the sport, Eric has stayed involved in football as a commentator, a columnist, and a podcaster, conducting interviews that impact and inspire on how to lead a more effective life. Eric is also the author of his brand new book, which I bought, titled Tackle What's Next, Own Your Story, Stack Wins, Achieve Your Goals in Business and Life. This was such a cool opportunity to talk to somebody that I remember watching on Sundays. Eric is not just a guy who rode the bench or got in from time to time. Actually, quite the opposite. He went years of being on the field every single snap. There was one year in particular where every time the Bills run offense, Eric Wood was on the field. It's just an incredible testament of his longevity and ability to stay healthy in such a violent game. So the topics we get into were, first, I wanted to start with, what was it like to receive the unexpected career-ending news? This story will give you goosebumps. And I wanted to dive in a little bit of what were the emotions like, and what were some of the things that were going through his head when he was told randomly that you can no longer play football anymore. After that, we talked about how to separate who from do, something I'm passionate about as a mental performance coach, is helping athletes understand that who you are is not what you do. We can't put our identity into sports or into results or into how much money we make. We're much bigger than that. We're separate from that. And sometimes when you climb the ranks and get into professional sports, it can get much more challenging to do so. So I wanted to pick Eric's brain on how he separated who from do. And then a majority of the episode was talking about strategies to make healthy pivots in life. Eric obviously had to make a huge pivot going from NFL to being a dad, a podcaster, just trying to figure out what was really next for him. And so his book is really about how to make healthy pivots and what are some of those strategies for other people that are making pivots. And, you know, voluntarily, I put my hand up first that I'm going through a pivot in my life. In the last year or so, I stopped competing in CrossFit at a really high level and also welcomed our baby girl into the world. And so pivoting from high level training for hours in a day to now looking at dad life and pivoting into more business related things, I couldn't be more excited about the future. However, it was just a great opportunity to talk to Eric about what were some of the strategies that he gained, and maybe I could take some of as well as I'm going through a pivot in my own life. And then we also talked about a big topic of the importance of serving others and how just crucial that is, really, no matter what stage you are in life, but especially when you're in a pivot. If you enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to leave a rating, review, and share it on your social medias. Also, if you're looking for your next book, I highly encourage you to check out my top 30 books written by Mindset Advantage guests. You can get that list at www.djhilliard.com/30books. Also, if you want to watch some of these episodes on YouTube, head over to our YouTube channel. You can go to YouTube, type in DJ Hillier or the Mindset Advantage podcast. Both of those should be able to get you to our page so you can watch the interviews at the conveniency of your own home. All right, without further ado, let's get to this fun conversation with Eric Wood, former NFL center for the Buffalo Bills. Eric Wood, welcome to the Mindset Advantage podcast. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. I'm glad it's finally here. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, my pleasure, DJ. I'm looking forward to this one.
Been a big fan of yours ever since you were playing with the Bills, and it was so cool to see you get in kind of the speaking world, the author world as well. I read your book, Tackle What's Next, Own Your Story, Stack Wins, Achieve Your Goals in Business and in Life. And similar to you, I didn't play professional football by any means, but I'm going through a little bit of a transition in my life as well. I've competed at a pretty high level in the sport of CrossFit for 9 years, and this past year and a half has been a little bit of a transition for me. We just welcomed our first baby girl to the family 2.5 weeks ago, and I'm pivoting more into speaking and coaching and just kind of changing my direction a little bit. So when there's a book that came out about transition and what's next and pivoting, I was all in on it, and I was really just glad to hear some of the strategies from you that I'm going to start using in my life. So incredible book. Congrats on the success thus far.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'd imagine with your career and then also the commitment it takes to compete at a high level in CrossFit, there's just not enough time. You can stay in shape, but there's a big difference between being in shape and competing in CrossFit. We would have, I used to own a part of a gym, and we would have people that would go compete in the CrossFit games, and the amount of time that it takes to, you know, not only be in top tier shape, but then to master all those specific movements, and then to go out and compete in these competitions, it all takes so much time. So I'd imagine this is probably a welcomed change in your household.
It sure is. And you know, it comes with some obstacles and some transitions and things maybe you're not used to, having some more time on your plate, filling some of that time, being okay, you know, being transparent, just being okay, not being as fit as I was a couple years ago and sitting with that and letting that be okay and kind of changing, you know, what the priorities are. And so it'll be a fun conversation today because I think you and I have a lot of parallels. But before we get into some of the strategies and stuff from the great spots from the book, I first want to start with your incredible story. Take me back to 2018 when you were at the doctor. This was such an amazing story. For my listeners that haven't heard, tune up because this is awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate you teeing that up. And I'll backtrack a little bit. So I grew up in Cincinnati. I was not even a starter on my high school football team as a junior. Played well my senior year, got a lot bigger, and got one scholarship offer to the University of Louisville. Dream come true after 4 years of starting for the Cardinals, become a first-round draft pick of the Buffalo Bills, immediately pop into the starting lineup there, and played 9 years there. And ultimately, I thought it would be a lot longer than that. Before my ninth season, I signed a contract extension with the Bills. And And we were in the midst of the longest playoff drought in all of professional sports, the four major North American sports. We had the longest playoff drought at that time, but we had just brought in Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, who are both there now. Ownership had changed recently with the Bills, and I loved the direction we were heading, even though we hadn't quite got over that hump. I re-signed with the Bills. I was actually Brandon Bean, the current Bills GM. His first ever contract he gave out as a GM in the NFL. He was an assistant with the Panthers prior, so I'm sure he was integral in some of their contract negotiations, but I'm the first one he gave one out to. And so before the 2017 season, I signed a contract extension. We do make the playoffs that year, and that's the year that everyone thought we were tanking. We had traded away our previous three top draft picks from the three prior drafts, and that's the team that gets over the hump, makes the playoffs. After the playoff game, I'm ready to race back to Louisville, Kentucky, where we spent the offseason. My wife is about to give birth to our second child. A little baby boy is coming in about 3 days. And so, I played every single snap that season. I didn't miss one, which is rare in the NFL because your shoe could come untied. You could get hurt. You could be beating a team really bad. You could be losing really bad, and you take some of the starters out. So I played every single snap that season, said, hey, clear me for the Pro Bowl. Let me get out of there. Every NFL player at the end of the season is required to take an exit physical. So going to the exit physical, they said, you got some stingers this year. Let's get an MRI on your neck, and then you can get out of town. Stingers, for those listening that may not know what they are, my high school buddies got them. I thought they were no big deal. And it's a burning, maybe nerve sensation down one of your extremities. For me, it was my right arm. I played center in the NFL. And so that could make maybe the next snap a little bit interesting with that going on. But look, I didn't think anything of it just because they're so common. And so then 3 days later, we're sitting in the delivery room waiting for the birth of my son. And I get the news that my career is over. At C2, C3, I had disc and bone sitting into my spinal cord. And that's what was causing the stingers. And it wasn't a similar situation to maybe some of the innocent ones that my high school buddies had or college and pro teammates. This one is a career ender. Even with surgery, there's no return to play. And so I'm sitting there in this emotional state. I relay the news to my wife. She starts crying. The nurse comes in and was like, oh, baby, it's not going to hurt that bad. And she's like, it's not about the baby. And so we have a good laugh about that one now. But, you know, that essentially put me on a different career trajectory that I wasn't ready for. I wasn't prepared for. I was the guy that just played every single snap. I had just signed a contract extension. And so for me, that put me on a path to figure out what was next in my life. And so I started a podcast, What's Next with Eric Wood, where I wanted to learn from successful people. And it's similar to yourself, DJ. I'm just trying to learn. I'm curious. I want to be a lifelong learner. Okay, well, let me talk to people that have either successfully transitioned in life or just have achieved success. And that's not just financial success. You know, I'm looking for thought leaders, game changers, great husbands, pastors, coaches, whatever it may be. I want to learn from you. And what you read in Tackle What's Next was a compilation of a lot of those things, a lot of the concepts that kept ringing true in people that successfully transitioned in life and career, whether that's just from college to the next career in life or had big pivots like I had. And so it's been a fun ride. Anytime you have those big transitions in life, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. I know you just briefly mentioned it, but the fact that you briefly mentioned that, you know, your body's not going to quite look the same when you're not training for the CrossFit Games, there's so many little things like that that you have to deal with. And it could be a challenge at times.
So take me back. I don't want to gloss over. There's a lot of emotion. When you got the news, you're also about to welcome your baby boy. There's a lot of emotions going on in that week. I just went through that week. It's crazy emotional. Fun as heck. High adrenaline. But there's a lot of different emotions you're feeling. Eric, what was the emotion like? Was it like, I don't believe you, or no, I'm going to prove you wrong. I can do it. Was it like, okay, what's next? What was the first emotion like when the doctor called you? Was it mad? Was it anger? Talk to me about that time.
Yeah, I'll rewind again just briefly. So my first year in the NFL, I do the Joe Theismann leg break, the tib fib fracture, break my left leg in half during an NFL game, go straight from the field to an ambulance. And I never got hurt once in college, played 49, started 49 straight games for Louisville. My rookie year in the NFL, I break my leg. My second year, I get a high ankle sprain on that broken leg and miss a couple games. My third year, I do an ACL, PCL, lateral meniscus, go on injured reserve again. And then my fourth year, I tore my MCL. And each and every time I bounce back from it, I went on to start 52 straight games for the Bills before breaking my leg, my other leg, on Monday Night Football in 2016 out in Seattle, which is a fun ride home through the night back to Buffalo. But I say those things because I had always bounced back. Now, none of those injuries in the moment did they say, hey, your career is over. But they said, okay, you may not be able to play at the same level because it's not easy to bounce back from these injuries, especially when they mount up and they're all lower body. But each and every season, I felt like I was improving in the NFL. So when I got this news about my neck, I thought to myself, okay, well, that's your opinion. Let's check out what everyone else's opinion is on this. And all I'm thinking is Peyton Manning, a year or two prior, got a neck fusion. Why can't I get a neck fusion? And so you start asking all these questions, and one by one, they all came back and said, look, Peyton Manning, that was C4, C5. It's lower. It's more stable. You can get a fusion and return to play. C2, C3 is completely different. And, you know, if you get injured in that area, you know, the way the cervical spine works, which I knew nothing about prior to being kind of thrusted into this spinal injury and all this information, that's loss of respiratory function, paraplegia. And so for me, I'm like, all right, well, the top 10 neuro spine guys in the country all said absolutely no return to play. All right, now it's officially over.
Eric, does it make it easier when you don't get the decision? The doctors, you're 0-10 in a way. They're telling you no way. Whereas, you know, I think some people, you know, like a Brett Favre or a Michael Jordan that kind of come in and out of retirement. Is it perhaps easier when somebody just says you're done?
It is. And people all the time ask me if I miss playing in the NFL. And I say, of course I miss it. And it's kind of like a round of golf. You think back and you think about all the good shots you had during a round of golf and maybe not the duffs and the bladed chip shots that go over the green. You look back on an NFL career and even just a football career in general, and you remember all the highs and maybe forget some of the lows, the off seasons that were full of rehab. And then you enter the next training camp. You don't feel that great, but you got to go put your body on the line again. You forget about those things. But for me, I truly loved professional football. I was a captain of an NFL team. I loved the guys in the locker room, the organization, the city in Buffalo. I loved everything about it. And so for me, I don't know when I would have walked away. I was extended at the center position to then be Josh Allen's center, or whoever they were going to draft in the first round. It became Josh Allen. So I was extended so he would have a veteran center in front of him. Well, this run with Josh Allen and the Bills has been so magical. When would I ever leave? Especially because they haven't gotten over the hump in the playoffs to win a Super Bowl or even make it to the Super Bowl. So I would think, okay, well, next year's the year. I got to come back and I got to get ready to roll again. So I do believe that it was a blessing that, you know, there was a hard stop and there's not this, oh gosh, the salary cap just went up again. Look what these guys are making. I could do it one more year. I could go put my body on the line one more time. And I have a lot of respect for Jason Kelce. I've known him since I believe I was 20. He was 18 years old. I was at the University of Louisville. He was at the University of Cincinnati playing with a bunch of my high school buddies there. And so I've known him forever. And I really enjoyed that Kelce documentary that his former college teammate Connor Barwin actually produced. It, I believe, it was on Prime. They did a nice job with it, but you got to see, and they did a great job of pulling back that curtain so that you could see some of that inner turmoil. And, you know, his wife wants him to hang it up, but he still comes back for one more season. And, you know, this, he ended up just announcing his retirement now after that following season where he decided to come back. But there's a lot that goes into those decisions to just keep coming back and putting it on the line, because that's all you know. And then once you give it up, it's over. It's over. You fought your whole life to be the best in the world at something. And then as soon as you give it up, then it's over. The fact that it was taken from me and I didn't have to wrestle with those decisions, there's definitely some blessings in there.
Sure. as a mental performance coach, Eric, the first of my seven skills is called staying deeply curious. And one of the first steps in doing that is staying curious, being curious about yourself. And better questions lead to better answers. So I'm really trying to get mostly high school and college athletes to get to know themselves and to get them to know themselves on what trips you up. What are the things you like? What don't you like? What frustrates you? And then also, how do you separate your who from what you do? Who are you away from sport? Because you're one injury away from being done. You're probably 2 years away from your sports career being done because most people don't even go play college. So I try to instill some of these thoughts and deep questions at a very early age so that when that day comes, that transition can be a little smoother and a little bit easier. I'm curious for you in your career, was that a similar path? Did you have conversations, thoughts, journaling? Did you have any sort of those conversations about who am I outside of football before it was over? Or were you kind of forced to have those conversations in 2018 for the first time?
I would say a little bit of both. And I love the fact that you're doing that with high school and in college athletes right now, especially because look, if you don't have the confidence and let's call it a little bit of arrogance to say I can go play professionally, then you're likely not going to get there. But you also have to have someone telling you, okay, let's prep for life after ball, whenever that may be, because at some point this is going to end, especially if you're playing football. I mean, a long career puts you in your early 30s. You know, play quarterback maybe around the age of 40 now. Those guys are playing longer and longer. They're just getting more and more protected. But, you know, that puts you at 30 years old. I mean, you look at Olympians and all these people that dedicate their whole life to something, and then it's taken away right around 30-ish years old if you had a successful career. And so I had done some of that work. I'm a man of faith. And I would have said, look, I'm a Christian. I'm a husband. I'm a father towards the end of my career. Our daughter was 2.5 when my career ended. You know, I'm a father now. I'm a philanthropist. I give back to the community. You know, I like to dabble in a little bit of business in the off season, some investments. Okay, I have all of this, but there's nothing that can prep you for that moment when your sport is taken away. And I don't know why. I do know why now, but at the time, I didn't realize it would be such a big deal to show up places and I was no longer Eric Wood, the Buffalo Bill, the Pro Bowl center showing up. I was kind of on their level, and it was, well, what are you doing now? Well, I'm not sure. I haven't figured it out. Well, you're too young to be retired. I realized that. I'm taking my time. You know, I'm pouring back into these things, but the world doesn't want to hear you say, because we've been so structured to say, if you don't work a 9-to-5 or if you don't work 50 hours a week, then you need to be more productive. You're not going to be, you know, fulfilling your purpose or however you want to say it. And so I really struggled initially with telling people I'm just figuring it out. And that's probably a people pleasing mentality, worried about the faux pas that a former guest of yours, Michael Gervais, talks about often, you know, worrying about other people's opinions and not just resting in the fact that, look, I sacrificed a lot to be at that profession for so long, to be at that level, to earn a financial security that I don't need to rush out and get another job. But it was tough when your identity isn't that I'm Eric Wood, the Pro Bowl center.
What would your advice, Eric, be to if you were standing on a stage, which I'm sure you have, let's just say you're standing in front of a stage in front of, you know, high school football athletes, and you're trying to convey the message of separate who from do, what would you tell those young men and then maybe young women as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say have an identity outside of your sport because you are so much more than that. And then also surround yourself with people that can help you in that transition, whenever that may be, because it's not going to be easy. Some are blessed with an incredible family. I was as well. I had incredible friends. I had a foundation built on my faith that I could fall back on. And all of those allowed me to not truly ever hit rock bottom. Like my foundation would catch me, my friends, my family, my faith. Those things caught me in those moments, because ultimately your career is going to end at some point. But then understanding that you're truly so much more than just an athlete, even if that's what people see you as. You truly are so much more than that. And the more, the earlier you can realize that, the better. And, you know, I talk about my friends, my family, my faith. I also started working with an executive coach, similar to yourself, a performance coach, 6 months before my career ended. I was working with him during the 2017 season. And so I had an executive coach to be able to kind of coach me through that transition. I could give you 50 reasons why I'm the luckiest dude you've ever talked to. And that was one of those just fortunate moments to where I'm an accountability partner for a teammate of mine. I say, okay, well, I'll give this a shot as well. I'm an accountability partner with this same performance coach. And so having people that can help you through that transition and just understanding that sometimes you just have to give yourself a little bit of grace. The fact that you're just trying to figure out the next steps is okay. And I would relay that as well.
I love that. So it sounds like accountability partners, knowing early on that you're more than just an athlete, having faith in something that maybe other hobbies and things that you can root yourself in. Let's polarize it. What was something, I'm sure there was a couple things, if you were to be a little vulnerable here, Eric, what was one or two items that as you were transitioning didn't help you? It was like, man, I got to stop doing this, or I got to stop thinking about this, or what was something that didn't help? I like to polarize both ideas so people can see what didn't help.
Yeah, I said yes to too many things early on. Mm-hmm. It was, hey, you have more time on your hands. You should join this board. Hey, you should, you know, take a role at the gym maybe that I owned a piece of at the time. And I was saying yes to so many things, so many trips, whether it's a golf trip, a golf scramble, there were so many things that I was just saying yes to fill time that, and I always say, look, I'm better busy than bored. I don't do well if I'm sitting around. I like a lot going on, but I was saying yes to so many things. And then when your opportunity, when broadcasting came along for me, well, now I'm on three different boards. I've committed to all these engagements, and now I have a full-time job during the football season. And so I would be, that was one area I struggled, was just saying yes to so many things. Now, saying yes to so many things allowed me to try a bunch of things out and see what I liked and didn't like. But that was one thing, in my transition out that I really struggled with. And then, you know, it was kind of this period of, okay, I'm going to take some time off. And I mentioned better busy than bored. And so the first fall that I was out, I called one game for Fox and I did a couple of pregame shows. And I realized quickly that I always had this dream of one day I'm going to play 15 years in the NFL and I'm just going to get in an RV with my family and go to like different college football tailgates and whatnot. Okay. That was a very empty feeling waking up on Mondays. You're tired, likely a little hungover, and you're sitting there going, okay, this on rinse and repeat each and every week. We didn't do that a ton, but we went and visited a bunch of my, you know, friends that were still playing the league. You know, we'd go down to Tampa and visit Ryan Fitzpatrick. We'd go to a Bills game. We kind of bounce around, watch the Louisville game somewhere that we'd never seen him play before. And oftentimes you envision that, you know, that downtime when you're done, that downtime after the grind, you think you're going to enjoy that more than you actually are. Mm-hmm. And maybe you kind of enjoyed the process and the grind to get you where you were more than you truly thought you did.
That's interesting. One of my mentors one time told me as I was kind of transitioning out of sport was, your physical peak isn't your peak of life. Your physical peak isn't your peak of life. And he talked about how, you know, everybody goes through seasons of life. And for most of us, our physical peak is probably anywhere between like 25 and 30 years old, depending on if you're still competing in your sport. If not, it's probably earlier, 18 or 19. But you think about your life in this kind of this 99 year span. Most people would say at the end of their life that the best part of their life wasn't when they were the most fit. In my case, I'm trying to chase fitness with CrossFit. Is that something that resonates with you, that you feel like, yes, those were great times, but that wasn't the peak of my life? As in, those were great days, but my best days are ahead of me. Is that something you think about? Does that sit with you? It sure helped me a lot. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, me and my wife say each and every year that the previous year was the best year of our life. Our kids, each stage, they're now 6 and 8 years old. Each stage is, I think, has got more fun than the last, and maybe that's some recency bias with them. But I will say, as a dad, when you have a 1 and a 3 year old, there's just not so much you could do with them. You know, the 1 year old wants the mom, the 3 year old, I'm playing dolls, but like now we're going to baseball practice and football and field hockey. And to me, it's just been more fun, and each and every year has provided new experiences. So I truly do believe that each and every year life has gotten better. And you also kind of more time with your wife, you figure her out and you have a healthier relationship as you keep growing in that relationship. So I think you're spot on. And I feel so bad for those. And I don't want to just keep telling pro football stories. I mean, I have high school buddies that would say, oh, the best years of our life were in high school. I'm like, man, that's just a terrible mindset to take into this current spot that you're at in life. Like each and every chance, each and every point in your life could then be, you know, kind of that best time of your life, that most fulfilling time of your life. You say, being in your best shape. It's funny. I definitely was the strongest I'll ever be in my life when I was playing in the NFL, but at 310 pounds, I'm about 60, 65 pounds lighter. I'm definitely in better shape now than I was then. You know, right when my career ended, I lost 53 pounds in 3.5 months at a weight loss competition against a buddy. That's the only reason I know that the exact measurables there. And, you know, I've lost a little bit of weight since then, but I don't stress about it overly hard. But for me, that at that time, it was, okay, I want to get as fit as I possibly can. And then you realize, okay, you do that. Then what's on the other side of that? There's always going to be something you're chasing. Look, I'm a huge proponent of creating goals and challenge, as I love a good 30-day challenge. I love a 30-day fast from, you know, alcohol, from social media, from buying Starbucks, or 30-day fast from Amazon, which you'll realize how reliant you are on Amazon if you try those. Me and my wife like little challenges like that just to make us appreciate it the next time we do it. You know, after that 30 days, you'll really appreciate the next time you get on social media. And I, you know, for me, for my job, I don't have to get on Pro Football Talk or ESPN to try and scour some information. I can get on Twitter and, you know, see what everyone's opinion is on something really quick. And so I love those challenges. I love those little fasts. I love setting goals, but I think you're exactly right. When you can find contentment in your situation, you're going to feel so much more peace in that moment. And that area of contentment is not likely going to be when you're in your peak physical shape. Cause when you're in your peak physical shape, you're always striving for that next little 1% advantage.
It seems like one of the mistakes people could make during a transition is continuing to try to fight back to the person that they used to be. So it could be somebody in their 40s trying to get back to the same shape or the same speed they're in college. It could be, you know, it just physically, it could be mental, it could be anything, but they're trying to get back to this person that they used to be. And sometimes I think that could be a mistake. As we transition into a new part of life, it's almost like going through a breakup. What we don't want to do is continually go back to that person. We want to face forward, start walking forward and look into the future. Is that a mistake that you think people could make, is that when they try to transition, maybe they got one eye to the right, but then they keep kind of wandering, they got one eye over to the left, and they can't quite close the door because they're trying to still get back to that point where closing the door all the way is the hardest, but probably the best thing for you. You got to close the door. You got to block the person on Instagram. You got to do whatever you need to do to transition a step forward. And sometimes it takes a little bit of a harsher boundary. I could imagine for some people in the NFL, it's like, I need to step completely away. I'm not doing anything on broadcast. I'm not watching anything on site. Maybe it's a big break similar to that. Talk to me about putting a boundary up, shutting the door completely, and not trying to continue to be going back to that person you used to be.
Yeah, that's a great point there. And so for me, I always say that calling football games and being around the game is good for my soul. Now, I'm not fully entrenched in it like the coaches, and I have tremendous respect for everybody in the coaching industry, especially college and NFL timing-wise. Some of the most impactful people in my life growing up were my grade school, high school coaches. I'm not diminishing their role in developing young players in their character and everything else that goes with that. But the amount of hours that the college and pro coaches coach, the amount of hours they work in a week is just truly unbelievable. So I get to be around the game, but I still get to be home during the week. I'm around my family. So it's kind of best of both worlds, but we make a drastically amount less than those coaches do, but you get paid for the amount of time and the amount of value you bring. And they're bringing a lot more time and value to the table than I am. But yes, I feel like in many cases, football, you can definitely see that. You can see the guys that can't get away from trying to come back. They'll trash their bodies at the end of their career, trash kind of their reputation of who they were as a player just to be out there on the field. And when that happens, when they do finally give it up, it's likely healthy for them to kind of step away and say, okay, I need to be away. I need to transition into something else. Now, I would say for those individuals, you got to find something that you can then go compete at, go try and be great at something else or be great at something, call it golf, call it, you know, real estate, whatever it is, kind of pour your time into something because you're going to have to fill that void that you have where you're constantly striving because you're likely ingrained to be like that. If you achieve that high level of success, you know, I'm thinking of it in a different sense as well. And this is convicting for me. And this is what hit me when you were bringing that up was there's been many times in my life where I've had friends or there's been relationships in my life that didn't serve me, but I had the hardest time moving on from those and kind of stepping in to a different group of friends, the different surroundings, giving up something when you know, transition to a life where you have two kids that are occupying your schedule, but you really still want to go drink a beer and watch a ball game with your buddies. And it just doesn't fit right now. And it's hard to give those things up, but there's incredible fulfillment on the other side of moving on from those things that are holding you back in life. You know, one of my favorite things to talk about is you become like the five people you spend the most time with. It's the Jim Rohn quote, and that you become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Les Brown, legendary speaker, says you'll earn within $2,500 of income compared to the five people you spend the most time with. So that can really get you thinking. And look, when you're on an NFL football field and you're in the locker room each and every day, you're surrounded by other professional football players. That is a great thing. You know, you're going to become the average of five professional players, and that's great. But there's a difference between the fringe players and the guys that are going to be making Pro Bowls, the guys that are potentially going to be Hall of Famers one day. They act different. They think different. It's often uncomfortable to be around those guys. Don't go sit by them in the cafeteria at lunch if you don't want to be convicted, if you grabbed some crap to eat for lunch that day. Don't go work out with them in the weight room because you're going to be very convicted if you went in there just to go through the motions that day because they're not likely like that. Okay, well, apply that to your life. And it's oftentimes the people that make you a little bit uncomfortable to be around, those are the people that are going to help you move the needle forward in life. And, you know, ultimately, if you're anything like me and you're a people pleaser, like one of your big fears is you're around a group of buddies and they say, oh, you're so much different now. Well, I would be embarrassed if I hadn't seen people in 10 years and they said, you know, or if I would be embarrassed if they said, oh, you're exactly how you used to be. You're the exact same. If they couldn't notice that I have grown and that I am different in the last 10 years, then I think that's embarrassing.
A couple things I want to pick on. The first was finding something to compete. So I had the chance to play college football here in Minnesota. And after I was done playing college football, I was trying to scratch that itch. I wanted to compete. And I have the story of driving home from school. It was about a 30-minute drive, and I see a CrossFit gym. And at the time, 2012 or 2013, CrossFit was just kind of getting started. So I pulled in, met the guy, and then just jumped all into CrossFit and then did that for 9 years at a high level. And so now, you know, 9 years being done, now I'm looking for something else to compete in. And my eyes are looking at all these interesting things. I'm looking at golf. I'm looking at archery. I'm looking at just what can I do to get my hands in? Because I think, like what you said, it's in my blood to compete. So talk to me a little about, I think that is a missing gap for people that are in sports for their whole life. They love to compete and they love to prepare. I love the process. Like for me, when I played football and in CrossFit, I love the training almost a little bit more than I love the games. I just love practicing and training. I love that part of it. So that's kind of what I'm missing. I'm curious, what's the advice or kind of what's the nuances when it comes to finding something to continue to compete in? Because we know that the older you get in the 40s and 50s and 60 years old, those opportunities get a little bit smaller. You can't just go, you know, play a pickup basketball game. I mean, I'm sure you could, but those opportunities get a little smaller.
Yeah, to me, competition's everything in life, and it's sick. It's a character flaw of mine. Everything's got to be a competition. But when I exited the NFL, I realized quickly I had to find something to compete at. And so I love playing golf. I love competing in golf. I've gotten into pickleball. We play that at 6 a.m. I play with some guys and we go out there and grind it out for 1.5 to 2 hours. And the first time I came home from playing pickleball, my wife was like, well, how was it? I said, well, I broke a paddle, was yelling cuss words, and it was the most fun I've had in a long time. Like I needed that competition to start my day. And look, just going to the gym and doing HIIT classes where you're not necessarily competing against someone, and I'm naturally going to be one of the stronger guys out there just based upon all my training over the years and my stature, like that wasn't cutting it from a competition standpoint. But now that I can compete on the golf course, which you want to talk about a humbling game and something that you have to pour time into in the preparation and the journey. Like I like going and hitting balls and just trying to get incrementally better as much as I do necessarily winning a game on the golf course. Like to me, there's a lot of fulfillment in golf, and not to get in on a tangent because I'm obsessed with it now, but they're finding, I've done some work with the PGA Hope where they take these veterans that are out of the military and maybe they're not even suited to be able to work and hop into something. So they need something in their life. They might not have the resources to play golf. So they get them the resources, they get them the connections, they get them on the course. And then they realize, oh shoot, like I'm no longer able to serve in the military. I don't get up and make my bed perfectly and shine my boots and my gun and get everything prepped for the day. But man, I get my weapons out. I get my golf clubs out now and I got my balls. I got my gear. I'm going to be in uniform today and I'm going to go out and compete. And it's, and then they're out in the sun, they're around people, they're having great conversations. And so I believe there's great value in the game of golf, but there's many things just like that, that people can go out and compete at. And then it's, you know, I just believe in competing at everything you do, whether it's the podcast world, whether it's business. Look, every 2 weeks, and this is in my book, every 2 weeks, and I was challenged by my executive coach to do this, is to ask my wife for a score of 1 to 10 on how I was as a dad and husband. Being a great dad and husband means a lot to me. Okay, well, how can I make this a competition for myself? Give me a grade between 1 and 10 and give me some feedback, and I will not justify. And sometimes you do want to justify, you know, some of the responses, but it helps you grow as a dad and husband. And it also gives you a little bit of a scoreboard because we all love having a scoreboard. You can apply that to a marriage, you know, a relationship. You can also apply it to business. You can apply it to friendships. You can apply it to many things in your life to get that feedback to where you can compete at everything.
See, this to me, Eric, is why, and I'm very passionate about this. This is why I believe everybody needs to play sports, because as you can see, the lessons are infinite. And some people are like, yeah, okay, I get it. I think every kid should be involved in sports, because look at some of the things where you're pulling out routines, attention to detail, fellowship, relationships. I mean, some of the lessons that you're learning without even thinking about learning them. I mean, it's even some of the things that I did in college football, I'm still doing them now as far as routine goes. You learn those and they become a part of you, and then they carry you into your 30s and 40s and 50s. So it's not just when you're 8 years old and you're having fun in the backyard. You're really molding yourself to kind of who you become in the future. Would you agree that, I mean, sports are just such, I know for some people it's like, duh, but for other people, it's like, they are monumental in the way that kids grow and the way that humans just kind of, you know, evolutionize into their later years.
Yeah, there's so much value, and we could fill 5 podcasts with the value of sports as far as teamwork and resiliency, learning how to win, learning how to lose, learning how to be coachable in life, and how that then serves you in business and sport and every other aspect of life. And yes, I mean, there's such a great value in sports in youth nowadays. And I'm a huge proponent of variety of sports. You know, my daughter's, she's got dance today and she's also got field hockey. She's starting field hockey and it's a, you know, a 6-week little deal. Give it a shot. See if you like it. And if you don't, yes, you have to finish this 6-week deal, but we'll try something else. It's all good. And it's, and especially for youth, it's not necessarily about pushing them constantly. It's about, to me, it's just about all the lessons that they learn. It's about getting them active. It's getting them away from screens nowadays, which is harder than ever. To me, there's just tremendous value in kids playing sports nowadays. And, you know, everyone's attacking tackle football amongst youth nowadays. And look, I'll be the first one to tell you that's not for, tackle football is not for every kid. But if you're a parent out there listening to this or a future parent listening to this, there's less concussions in tackle football up until high school than falling off bunk beds, then recess, then soccer. And so, you know, it's fairly far down the list. So, you know, even with tackle football and kind of the bad stigma around it right now, I wouldn't even be afraid of putting my kids or my son into tackle football. Based upon the research I've done, and look, I've played it as well. Those kids aren't going very fast. There's not huge collisions out there, and they're being taught to play it in a safer way than when we were kids. And I'm sure DJ, you're the same way. It was tackle with your hat in your hands, put your head on the football and jar it loose. That's not the way they're teaching it anymore.
Another topic that I want to really get into, and it seems that you're very passionate about it, and it's something that quite honestly, I've been really convicted of recently, journaling and thinking about and talking with some of my closest friends. And it's this idea of service and serving others. And I love this part in your book, and you can see it with your, with just who you are, Eric, just the vibe that you have and your social media, you're very much thinking about other people first. For me, Eric, for the last 9 years, I lived a very selfish life because everything was about me. It was about CrossFit. It was about getting to my physical peak. I missed out on some things. I missed out on some bachelor parties, some good times with buddies because I wanted to get to bed early. And I had a priority that was very different. And when you're focusing on your physical side of life, you have to give up a lot of things. And so right. What has been really a big shift for me since giving up CrossFit the last year and a half is that I've been able to pour in so much more to other people. And it has been, a little bit emotional because it's been so much more fulfilling. And, you know, at the gym, I also do some personal training. So I would work out for 3.5-4 hours grinding, and to the point where you're on the ground, you can't breathe. And then in comes a kid and he's ready for a personal training session. And I'm trying to give everything I have. But now when I look at it, looking back, when I'm not doing these sessions, my sessions are better. My communication is better. My relationships are better. My client, everything is better, because I'm able to pour more into them and then less into myself. And I understand that if you want to be the best at something or near the best, you have to be selfish. I get it. You have to be obsessed. I understand that. But for me, there's been a huge light bulb moment for me. It was like, oh my gosh, for the last 9 years, I've lived so selfishly. And now all I want to do is the opposite. I'm not training nearly as much. I'm putting everything I can into my friends, my family, my daughter. Talk to me a little bit about you. I know you're very passionate about it, and your favorite verse is Proverbs 11:25. Whoever brings blessings will be enriched, and the one who waters will himself be watered. Talk to me about serving others. Did you feel that as well when you're in the NFL? Was it a selfish life for you too? Walk me through that.
Yeah, there was definitely a selfish mentality. Now, I had a supportive wife that understood that, you know, our life for this short period of an opportunity to create generational wealth and incredible memories and relationships, there was going to be some selfishness on my part. Like if I needed to recover, we're probably hanging out on the couch that night and we're maybe not going to an event or out to dinner. We might just be hanging at home. And you know, I say that I'm the more social one in the house. And so, but a lot of our schedule, our entire year was based upon my football schedule, but you know, that's what it was. And, you know, we both saw it as an incredible opportunity and we both enjoyed the ride as well, but there's a lot of selfishness that has to take place in that. But, yeah, you mentioned Proverbs 11:25. The translation that we have written on our wall prior to leaving our house and into the garage is a generous person will prosper and he who refreshes others will be refreshed. Like if you build others up, you will feel built up yourself. If you are generous, then you will in turn reap the benefits of it. And it seems like the math doesn't add up, but I'll tell you, you can test me on that one. As you pour yourself out into the service of others, you will feel a sense of fulfillment that you hadn't felt before. At the bottom of my stationery, I have a quote from Jackie Robinson. It says, "A life is not important except in the impact that it has on others' lives." And so for me, when I was transitioning out of the NFL, a guy named Chris Burke, who lives in Louisville, Kentucky, he's actually the former second baseman for the Astros. He hit the home run against the Diamondbacks to send them to, I believe, the World Series, ALCS or World Series. And he told me when I transitioned out and he was giving me some advice, he said, "Look, you're going to put a lot of focus on you like you have your entire career to get where you're at. And I'm going to tell you that as you keep doing that, you're never going to replace football. You're likely not going to be the best in the world at something else. And that's completely okay. Use this platform to serve others. Use this platform to make an impact on others. And watch how much more fulfilling that is than you trying to chase the next thing constantly." And so for me in my life, the impact that I've been able to have on others simply, and I like to say like this, simply by playing a game with a ball for a living. Like, I didn't protect our country. I didn't cure cancer. I played a game with a ball for a living and I was pretty good for a short period of time in the grand scheme of things. But because of that, I get to stand on a stage with a microphone and encourage individuals in the crowd. I can try and bring others to Christ. I can show up at, you know, my kids' ball games now and have some flexibility in my schedule to be able to be more present at home. And all of that comes from the mentality of just constantly trying to serve others. And it's amazing that when you try to outgive the other people in your life and you try to outserve them, it's amazing where their mindset goes to want to then serve you in return. And that's kind of the biblical truth being played out. And I was reading in a book called Radical Marriage by Reggie Campbell. He said, if you're struggling in your sex life with your wife, serve her. If your house is really dirty and it upsets you, you clean it, serve your wife. And it's amazing. And this isn't necessarily why you do it. You're trying to, you know, build up and pour into your spouse. But it's amazing when you start cleaning the house, they want to clean it as well to kind of do their part. When you wake up and make your wife coffee in the morning, it's amazing. She's going to look for that next thing that she can do for you, as opposed to kind of playing that scoreboard game all day with each other. And I've just seen incredible fruit in my life come from trying to constantly serve those around me.
I have too, man. And as also getting on some stages and talking to some teams, one of the things I think about, you know, before grabbing the microphone is focus on service and you won't get nervous. You know, sometimes we get nervous because we focus on ourselves, or we have anxiety because, you know, pregame anxiety because we're like, man, I hope I don't F up. I hope I don't do this. Where it's like, hey, man, I'm just going to go out there and serve my team, serve my community. I'm going to put others first. I think there's so many times, especially in football, another big common scenario is if you're a two and the guy in front of you out there just scored a touchdown, are you out there congratulating him? Are you serving him that way? Or are you like, should be me out there, man? I'm getting, what's going on, man? That should be me. So there's so many different ways to show service, man. But I think once you tap into that world, it truly, and I'm here to say it first, guys listening, that it truly changes your life. It really changes your outlook, your fulfillment. I mean, my heart the last year has felt different, brother, just different when you start putting other people first. And I don't regret it. I'm not saying I regret the last 9 years. It takes what it takes. I had to do what I had to do. And that's okay. I'm sitting fine with that. But when you start putting other people first, man, it changes your life.
Yeah. And it's valuable to not beat yourself over something that you weren't exposed to or had a breakthrough on yet. And that's okay in life. And that's the beauty of constantly evolving and constantly changing. And then it's not to say, okay, if you're out there and you're trying to get in shape and you realize that something you've been eating for the last 5 years in the morning, that oatmeal, whatever it is that doesn't work well with your system, well, you don't regret it. You thought you were making choices for the betterment of yourself then. Well, don't beat yourself over now. Just change. Just flip that mindset. I read a book on the All Blacks, the rugby team, and the very first chapter talks about how when in the All Blacks are the most dominant sports franchise in history, this Australian All Blacks rugby team. And when they go somewhere, they always leave it better than they found it as far as locker rooms, facilities. And whoever is the highest ranking player, their, I'll say captain, but they may have multiple captains, he sweeps, he grabs the broom. And so afterwards, yes, everyone's picking up after themselves, but the last one is the one that's going to grab the broom, which is a great, you know, just model. It's not even a metaphor, it's reality. It's a great model that in the most successful organizations, families, groups, it's the leader that serves the most and serves the hardest and serves last that's going to make the biggest impact and sets the tone for everyone around them.
Great story. I'm going to close it down with what I call the $1 million question, Eric. The $1 million question goes like this. What do you know now that you wish you knew before you got into the NFL? What do you know now that you wish you knew before you put on that Bills uniform? This could be something with sports related, could be finance, could be family, but what's that piece of advice you wish you knew then? And I like to just caveat with my guests that I like to take out the whole idea of, I wouldn't tell myself anything. I don't have any regrets. I get it. I like it. But what's the advice?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there because the token answer would be, oh, I'm so happy with where it's at. I wouldn't change anything, but that's often not true. You could have avoided a few speed bumps that would have, made the journey a lot easier, whatever those may be for me. And there, honestly, I could point to many things, but the thing that I would say most is to enjoy the ride. And I didn't have a true spirit of gratitude for just being in the NFL until year probably 6 or 7. And that's being completely honest. Every stage of football from my freshman year at U of L was, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? Get to be a first round draft pick. That's my sole goal. First round draft pick. Okay. I got there. Okay. Now the goal is to get a huge second contract to make a Pro Bowl, you know, win a bunch of games. Okay. We're not winning games. I keep getting hurt and it's not working out like I thought it would. Okay. Now I have no gratitude for a position that I'm in right now that I would have done anything for. If you would have rewound 5, 6, 7, 10 years, I would have given anything to be in that position. And I had no gratitude for it because it was constantly looking for what's the next thing. When I signed my second contract in the NFL, which was a game changing generational wealth contract for me, they made me top 2 highest paid center in the NFL. Well, then it was, okay, now I got to prove that I'm worthy of this money. I got to play at such a high level that the team thinks that they got a discount. Okay, now we have to win because I'm first round draft pick and they extended me. I'm a captain on this team. We have to win now because eventually my career is going to end and I can't enter in this long playoff drought and leave in this long playoff drought. And it was 2016 and I had a broken right leg. And so I was driving to the stadium, which I only lived about a mile from the stadium. I know people are going to say this is really dangerous, but I had my left leg crossed over my right leg so that I could drive with my left foot. And I was driving to the stadium. It's pitch black outside. I could see the stadium lights. I thought, man, how lucky am I that I get to go rehab at this incredible facility. I'm living out my dream. I'm a captain of this organization. I have incredible relationships all over the building from ownership. And I say to the male guy, but my man Rick knows that I'm not putting him low man on the totem pole. I'm just saying through the positions, like great relationships all over the building, man, how lucky am I in this moment? And that's when I started this practice of gratitude drives in the morning where I'd drive to the stadium, no sound out of the car at all, and just a prayer meditation of gratitude that completely changed my outlook. And it's amazing. You know, I could sleep after games a lot better. Even if I gave up a tackle for loss or had a crappy game, I could sleep a lot better just resting in the fact that I'm playing out my dream, and how lucky am I to be in this situation?
So I said that was the last question, but I have to ask a follow-up. What's the advice for athletes to find joy in the journey? So what worked for you? Talk to me about that. And then what's another strategy you think you would give young athletes to find joy in the journey?
Here's what I would say. You know, you can often overestimate, and this is one of my favorite quotes, you can often overestimate what you can do in a day, a week, a year, and underestimate what you can accomplish in 1 to 5 years. And so stacking wins is part of the title of the book, but it's also something that I believe can give you a sense of fulfillment, a sense of joy, a sense of keeping track of the progress in your life. And when you're on that journey, and maybe the needle's not moving as far as you'd like, or maybe the results aren't what you want them to be, but your process is right and you're not understanding that, I would encourage people, and this comes from Jason Selk, a legendary performance coach, was with the St. Louis Cardinals over a decade, over the law of the best win percentage in Major League Baseball history while he was their performance coach. And he said the most powerful thing he did was every night, and you had to write it down because then it hits your brain 7 times harder, write down 3 wins from the day. Any 3 wins, no losses, just 3 wins from the day. And it could be, I didn't have any cheat meals. It could be, I got a great night's sleep last night. I felt pretty good this morning. Sometimes it's, I went 3 for 4 at the plate, hit 2 bombs. Like, that's major wins. Okay, that's great. Something. He goes, a lot of these guys that go to the ballpark at 1 or 2 and they're there till 10:30 midnight, just taking their kids to school in the morning, that's a win. You know, you pour it into your family. Find 3 wins. And this is for athletes and non-athletes out there. Find 3 wins every day, write them down, and you'll be amazed how much confidence you walk in on a daily basis and joy you can find just knowing that even if, and this is our human nature, we lay our head on our pillow at night and find the one thing we messed up on that day, and we just sit there and just mellow on it. Well, this will put in your brain, okay, we accomplished something today. We got that 1% better that we were looking for. So that would be my advice, is to focus on the wins, no matter how small they are, over and over and over, and understanding that those are going to lead to big breakthroughs in your life.
Right. Eric, I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. I don't usually get that vulnerable, and so I appreciate you letting me do that and talk about a little bit of my journey. For the listeners out there that want to learn more about you, Eric, where can I point them, and how can they get your book, and how can they hear more from you?
Yeah, on Twitter and Instagram, I'm the most active, at ewood70. The book's available on Amazon or wherever you buy books out there. And then I have my podcast, What's Next with Eric Wood. And then for any Bills fans that are tuning in, and I'll be sure to share this with my audience as well, I have the Centered on Buffalo podcast, which is more sports-based interviews. Your audience will certainly like my What's Next with Eric Wood podcast. A lot of similar guests, maybe some different ones as well. But just like yourself, just trying to help, you know, selfishly trying to, you know, learn from individuals that can help me keep progress in my life, but then also a mentality of service and understanding what that's going to do for those tuning in each and every week.
Eric, this has been awesome, man. You're such a blessing, genuine guy. I look forward to staying in touch. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah, my pleasure, DJ. Anytime, brother.